I feel like I'm living in Casablanca before Rick had his conversion and redemption. The Nazis are in charge. Life is cheap. People are trapped. People shouldn't be enjoying themselves. There seems no way out. A certain spirit has taken over, and there doesn't seem to be any light at the end of the tunnel. That's my feeling. I feel this is the situation we're in. But on the broader issue, I was trying to imagine how Freud would read the outcome of the election and all the electioneering that went on before it. And I think he would pick out Trump's slogan, "Make America Great Again." So Freud would bring four fundamental concepts to understanding what went on. He would say there's division, there's trauma, there's reversal, and there's nostalgia. Now, the divisions are obvious enough. The Republican Party is very divided, obviously. But the trauma is there. People are talking about a political earthquake, about a seismic shift. I've heard of teachers in America with kids crying in their class, wondering, will Third World War going to happen? Wonder, will they be deported, even though they were born in America, from Polish parents or Baltic states? So fear is rampant. And so the traumatic element is certainly there. And we know the consequences of trauma. But all the reversals were expressed. Abandoned Obama's legacy. Reversed the NATO agreement. Go back on global warming. I think it can be summed up when somebody said he wants to replace the Statue of Liberty with a wall. And as Pope Francis said, people who talk about building walls, not bridges, are not Christian. So in that sense, a friend of mine says it was all fantastic. It was all like a soap opera. It was so entertaining. And that may be true, but what about the consequences?
I mean, some people are saying, somebody made the point that people canvass in poetry, but they rule in prose. And it's a common political strategy. Mm-hmm. And that in some ways, Trump's poetry, if you like, was hatred, was this like virulent hatred, but that maybe the prose of his ruling will be a bit more pragmatic, because he'll realise he can't do some of the things he promised. He can't start building walls everywhere. He can't, you know, deny reality and cut off and pretend that nobody else is there.
Well, that's true, and he's already reversing some of the things. Like, he's not going to pursue Hillary Clinton and put her in jail. He's not going to lock her up. He's also beginning now to have second thoughts about global warming. He's not saying all scientists are crooked. He's not saying it's a Chinese hoax. But when you think of the people he's appointing already, he may become more presidential and less abrasive, but the people he's appointed, your man Bannon. And I saw a clip in the news the other night with the white supremacist movement in New York. They are now being emboldened to speak out. And they end their meetings with Nazi salutes. And they want to go back to a world where the white man was supreme and everyone else was barbarian. And in a sense, Trump suffers from that nostalgic need of a golden age. Make America great again. The past was better. Go back to this golden age that never existed. So you're right, he is sounding a little more rational, but look at the people he's appointing. Mm-hmm. And who welcomed the election? North Korea, China, Putin, UKIP, the Ku Klux Klan.
It doesn't bode well, does it? I mean, there is a sense, as you say, the white supremacists are starting to talk. And when you look or listen to anything that they say, they feel like they're the victims. They feel like for the last 50 years, any of the things that other people might see as progressive rights, be they women's rights or rights of people from other countries or other colours, they feel like that's a taking away of the rights that they had, but that nobody was giving them a hearing, nobody was listening to them. And now, as you say, they feel, well, finally somebody understands where we're coming from.
That's exactly it. And Trump played into that. Just as the way the Brexit vote came about, those who felt left out with globalisation, those who felt neglected and forgotten for years, the voiceless, Trump really went for the alienated, the disenfranchised, the bitter on the margins. And that nostalgic need, I think, won it for him. I've lived a lot, over 70 years now, and I've never, ever heard so much written or spoken about an event as this one. Nothing has compared to the amount of reaction and response, and I think people are rightfully scared.
But is fear the thing to latch on to now at this stage? Even Obama and Clinton, you know, have been saying, well, you know, he's president now and we need to support him.
Well, I think we've got to make a virtue of necessity. I mean, we've got to accept, in a sense, that he's in the position now. We can't assassinate him, you know, although I think he might do something that will shoot himself in the foot. Because all the bluster and the bluffing, I mean, rhetoric is reality to some extent. People might say it's only words, but words have meanings that, you know, that aren't meant consciously from the beginning. So
some people say he'll be impeached.
Possibly, but that'd be another reversal. That'd be a big upheaval, and I can't see it happening too soon. But I do see a light at the end of the tunnel, in the sense that I was thinking of the Habsburg dynasty collapsing. That terrible time when there was that period of stability was ending. That period of awful suffering and political collapse produced one of the greatest paintings ever painted, Velázquez' Las Meninas. And in the 15th century, you know, Rublev's Trinity, the icon of the Trinity, I mean, that emerged out of a period of persecution where religion was really went through a tough time and of suffering and savagery and war. And out of that period emerged Rublev's icon of the Trinity, which was the most beautiful works of art ever painted. And I think what we have to do, if he's pronouncing publicly and explicitly, say, racist comments or sexist comments, just we say the opposite. We say, no, we don't stand up for that.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it comes down to the individuals. But, I mean, history has shown us that it tends to swing the other way, you know, that maybe there is an innate sense of sexism, racism within us all, and then suddenly when there is a voice for that in the public, it seems to rather happen that people are swayed by that and they almost get caught up in a frenzy. If you think of the Nazis, I mean, I'm sure a lot of the people who got caught up in that were lovely people, you know, who in an ordinary democracy, or if they'd lived in ordinary times, would never have been involved. But somehow we're attracted to our darker side, that we're attracted to that dark side.
Very much so, and Kierkegaard warned about that in the 19th century, the mob. When the mob, an idea takes root in the mob, it's very hard to stop, and the individual gets drowned out, and freedom and conscience are irrelevant. The link between freedom and conscience is just broken, ruptured. And it is a time of rupture now, I think. It's a discontinuous something is happening, and we don't see clearly how it will all play out, but it's certainly a traumatic reversal has happened, and I think it's rooted in Trump's own childhood. And I mean, he inherited the construction business from his father. His biggest inspirational figure at school was Norman Vincent Peale, The Power of Positive Thinking. And if you say it'll happen, it will happen. And yet, his whole casino project, he was convinced that was going to be a great success, and it went bust. So that whole way of thinking is prevalent, and it's in his mindset at the moment. And the past, like, he wants to reopen the coal mines, for God's sake. Now, coal, gas is cheaper for the start, and he's going to, you know, increase employment by doing something like this, which is completely off the wall. Well, certainly we are interdependent. I mean, the global village is a reality. And Trump wants to put America first. Let's get America back to its dominant position. And yet we know the growth that's happening in China and other parts of the world, that we're all so interdependent now. And I just hope and pray that Trump will wake up to that reality. But when I look at the people his team of advisors, although yesterday he elected a woman who criticised him during the election, maybe that's a straw in the wind or a little hopeful sign, I don't know.
Well, that, I suppose that's my last question for you then, is the hope. I mean, people listening to this might just feel, is this despairing? Is this inevitable? Is there even anything we can do about it? What kind of things can people do to counter this or to find hope?
Well, the American system may be a help here. There are checks and balances in the Congress, and not all Republicans are like Trump. So maybe, like Obama was handcuffed and inhibited in a lot of his proposals, and maybe they will put the brakes on some of Trump's more extreme positions. I mean, there's a lot of hatred now released. I mean, we don't know the half of it. I mean, we saw in England after the Brexit vote how hate crime increased enormously. I think Angela Merkel and people who would hold the opposite views, you can't deal with Trump rationally. It's no good arguing with him rationally. His position is not rational. It's rooted in an emotional, biological need. I mean, the neuroscientists would say, forget his mind, look at his brain.